Hello, Bokar Tov, Chodesh Tov. Misha Nechnas Adar Mar Bim Besimcha. Not only Adar Aleph, Adar Sheni now, and all the more so. The Simcha that we feel, and I have to say, the Simcha that I feel running in and seeing us, how many of you have come to learn this morning. So, sorry, deep breath. I'm going to begin with this. And thank you. So, as you see, we're going to take a look at two what I generally call almost neglected characters in Megillat Esther. And we're going to begin our Yom Iyun by focusing on the role that they play, recognizing how Bigtan and Teresh are actually instrumental in appreciating the story, both the storyline, and definitely meant to also, as we'll see in just a moment, highlight other characters and perhaps even broader messages in Megillat Esther. So with this, we begin with a function of secondary characters in any sefer, in any book of literature, kal v'chomer, in a work where we find a plethora of different characters. I always like to say that Megillat Esther is in fact almost meant to be put on as a drama, as a production, particularly, again, in large classes where you want to make sure that every single child plays a role. Well, when it comes to Megillat Esther, you have nothing to worry about because you have, as we know, primary characters, and it's true. Everyone, starting from kindergarten and on, if they're a girl, they vie for Esther. If they're a boy, they generally, not always, but they generally compete for the role of Mordechai HaYehudi. But it's okay, we have our villains in our story, and we have plenty of secondary characters. Secondary characters are those that are not only meant to propel the plot, helping the primary character along, but they're also there to highlight some of the character traits of the primary characters. They're there as well in order to help us appreciate some of the nuances throughout the story. We have some very famous supporting characters throughout Tanakh. Perhaps the most famous one is Ruth, in the sense that the story isn't really about Ruth. It's about Naomi. It's about her tshuva. It's about her geula. But nothing could have happened without the greatest supporting actress of Jewish history, which really is Ruth. Similarly, within Megillat Esther, we have numerous secondary characters who will both not only help us propel the plot, but help us understand what's going on behind the plot, some of the underpinnings of Megillat Esther. And then you have nothing to worry about when you have so many other children that you have to give parts to, because we have so many tertiary characters. We have the Sarisim, and some of whom actually have names, whether it's Hatach, Higash, Eshkaz. We also have, in addition to all of these, we have numerous groups of characters, the Yodei Ha'itim, the seven closest advisors to Ahasuerus, together with his numerous Sarisim. So not to worry, we have plenty of people, and just in case there are those who really don't like such an active role, we'll call them in when Esther says, Lech knos et kol ha-yehudim. So that's when you'll call the rest of, again, of the class, Tsumu alai, al tishtu, al tochlu shloshet yamim, and we'll see them fasting, repenting before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, how about then Bigtan and Teresh? We see that they first appear on the scene in Esther Perek Bet, almost as a true non sequitur to the story. And we're wondering not only why they appear, but why they appear here, even if they are going to serve on some level of foreshadowing. So let's begin in Perek Bet. We know that just as Esther enters the king's palace in the seventh year, in the 10th month, the month of Tevet, an interesting reversal, by the way, of Yom HaKippurim, the seventh month, the 10th day, she comes into the palace of the king, recognizing as well that the story began in the third year of Ahasuerus. So 4 years have transpired from the time that he's made his great feast, the time that he's banished Vashti, the time that he began what we generally call the beauty contest, which if you look carefully in the Psukim, is anything but a beauty contest. Rather, the forceful aggregation of numerous hundreds, thousands, thousands, collections of women who are then sent by transport to Shushan and deny their families, denied food, other giving our cosmetics, and literally mummified for 12 months, after which they appear before the king, only to return to the harem, which is guarded by Sheshgaz, by Baruch Hashem. As Mordechai will later tell Esther, Mi odea, im la'ed kazot higat la'machut, we find that Esther enters the palace of the king. And then right after the coronation, right after we hear about the financial state of the people, Bayamim ha'hem, three psukim that introduce two secondary characters. O Mordechai yoshev b'shar ha'melech, katzaf biktan v'teresh shnei sarisei ha'melech mishomrei hasaf. So as mentioned, we have numerous eunuchs mentioned throughout Megillat Esther, also highlighting the horrific state of economic affairs going on in the palaces and in the government of Paras u'Madaim, by virtue of the fact that there are people who are forced to castrate themselves in order to survive. So they enter the palace of the king, which obviously requires eunuchs by virtue of the fact that there are numerous women. And generally, we don't hear the names of the sarisim. We don't hear the names of the eunuchs. However, here we do. Their names are Biktan and Teresh, and maybe they receive extra fame because they are Mishomrei Hasaf. These aren't just any eunuchs that are surrounding Achashverosh. These are the ones who literally guard over the threshold. In other words, they are constantly around Achashverosh, even in his private chambers, which makes sense then for the next clause of the pasuk, Ve'yivakshu l'shloach yad b'melech Achashverosh. They have inner cunnings. They have an inner audience with the king, and therefore they have a greater chance of succeeding in assassinating the king. Ve'yivada ha'davar l'mordechai. This was somehow divulged to Mordechai. Mordechai knows about the assassination plot. Vayaged le'Esther, and he tells Esther ha'malka, v'tomar Esther le'melech b'shem Mordechai, and Esther tells the king in the name of Mordechai, by which Chazal learned the famous adage that we find in Perkei Avot and in Masechet Chagiga, kol ha'omer davar b'shem omro, mevi gula lo'olam. Esther, by mentioning this in the name of Mordechai, we're going to see the gu'ula, we're going to see the redemption that she brought in the story. Ve'yivukash ha'davar, sure enough, this was researched. Ve'yimatze, and it was found to be true. Ve'yitzlu shnehem al eitz. Giving us also the impression that what happens when one commits treason, when one is going to plot the assassination of the king, the punishment for treason is very appropriately, at least in the English language, is that you will be hanged on a tree. Excellent. And we're told that this is going to be chronicled in the chronicles of the king. Now let's turn just for a moment to Biktan and Teresh and try to understand, do we really need the story? So all of you are saying, of course we do, because we're familiar with Esther Perek Vav on the second side of the page, wherein we're going to hear about the Sefer HaZichronot. We're going to hear that the king can't fall asleep and he has this book of chronicles being read to him. And what do you know, on the night of all nights, and we'll see why, we find that he's reading about the story of the assassination plot of Biktan and Teresh and how it was written down in the name of Mordechai, how Mordechai was the one to save him. And then, as we know, by the next morning, Mordechai is going to be paraded through the streets of Shushan. Kacha yaseh le'ish asher ha'melech hafitz bikaro vin nahafochu. Everything seems to turn out just wonderfully as Haman's Pika in his stature is going to reach a nadir. He is going to fall, as Zeresh appropriately tells him. However, when we look at the story, we have to wonder, do we really need the details of the story? And all the more so, do we need to know really the names of Biktan and Teresh? And even more, why do we even need the story here? Can't we just hear the story in the context of Perek Vav, when Achashverosh can't fall asleep, and then we'll find out about the story of Biktan and Teresh? So we have numerous questions that we really ask ourselves on an annual basis, and hopefully today's Yom Iyun will finally resolve some of these questions. Let's begin then with Biktan and Teresh. As mentioned in our introduction, the secondary characters are here for two reasons: to highlight primary characters and to also help move the plot along. Let's first focus on role number one, highlighting primary characters. What we already see from the story is that the authors are telling us, look very carefully. This is the first time that you find two characters who are working in tandem one with the other. This is already going to set a certain sensitivity to what I like to call partners in crime. Namely, when you see different characters, the authors are telling us, look for a partner. After all, here we have Big Ton and Teresh, and very soon we're going to be able to see numerous partners. But this is the way for them to highlight the fact that generally, especially within the government, within the inner chambers of the king's palace, you don't work alone. You generally work with partnership. And who are these Big Ton and Teresh fellows? Well, let's take a look at their names. Their names are Big Ton. Big Ton, do I know that from any place? And the answer is yes. This is actually, as you can imagine, a very Persian name. And how does one know this? Well, let's look at a parallel sefer that takes place in similar lands, namely the book of Daniel, where we find that he, like Esther, is part of a children's transport, a kinder transport, which, by the way, is in the other direction, from an Eretz Yisrael to Galut, just like Esther HaMalkah. He's taken together with other children to a boot camp. But basically, this is a very difficult camp of survival. He's put on a very interesting diet. They have to eat for basically 3 years the bread of the king and the wine of the king. And whoever can survive this diet together with the rigorous tasks set before them by Nebuchadnezzar, including standing all day and passing numerous academic exams, they will then merit to stand before the king. Mind you, everyone else is going to be killed off. Daniel is put on this very strict diet of Pat Bag HaMelech. What the author of Daniel is telling us is that pat, that word you know, that's a Hebrew word meaning bread. Bag is the Persian translation of pat. Ah, now I know. Who is Big Ton? Who is Mr. Bag? He is the baker. He is Mr. Bread. This isn't his personal name. This was the name of the officer of the bread. He's the baker. How about Teresh? Well, Teresh we know, because both in all Semitic languages, Tirosh is, as you know from your Friday night grape juice, is wine. Tirosh, Teresh, is not his personal name. Teresh is the officer over the wine. Wait, this is a story of a baker and a butler. I know a story of a baker and a butler who attempted to assassinate a king, and ultimately, at least one of them, was hanged on a tree. Anyone remember this? This is the Yosef story. And we're all supposed to tell ourselves, well, that doesn't surprise us too much, because we know that Mordechai and Esther, in composing Megillat Esther, draw many, many associations and allusions to the story of Yosef, whether it's the very fact that Mordechai is the next Jew in Jewish history to become a Mishne Lamelech, to become second to the king, and even the way that he's paraded through the streets, and even the fact that he's given other names, and even the fact that he's given the signet ring of the king is so reminiscent of the story of Yosef. By the way, isn't that interesting that whenever Jews succeed in Chutz Laaretz, they only make it up to the position of Viceroy of even Joe Lieberman, just to the vice president nomination. And this is very interesting, a very, very powerful message. On one hand, then, what are Mordechai and Esther telling us by revealing the story of Big Ton and Teresh? Basically, they want to tell us that, yes, this is similar to the story of Yosef, so get ready. Even though you're going to see Jews in danger, even though you're going to see disunity, by the end of the story, what do you already know? Because there's a baker and a butler scene who are hanged on a tree, don't worry. Everything's going to turn out okay. But actually, what we know is that everything in the Yosef story doesn't necessarily turn out okay for the long term. What Mordechai and Esther are telling us is, wait till you see the unraveling of the plot. Wait till you see the danger of Jews in exile. When Jews are in the diaspora, yes, they are subject to so many different dangers. And even though there may be little moments of success, even though the baker and the butler may be hanged, and through this, Mordechai is going to rise to power, just like Yosef rising to power because of the story. Just stay tuned for what happens afterwards. So we turn to the Gemara Masechta Megillah, where Chazal say, it's so clear why Mordechai and Esther are telling us the story. Bayamim Haheim, O Mordechai Yoshe Bishar HaMelech, Katzaf Biktam Vateresh, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Heksif HaKadosh Baruch Hu Adon Al Avodav, Lasot Ritzon Tzadik. Don't you see how this is another story of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in worldly affairs? Somehow, we're going to figure this out in a little while, but somehow it's so clear as well that the Russian invasion of the Ukraine is really HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of facilitating Geula. Not exactly sure yet. I have a whole theory, but we have to wait and see. And in any case, this is exactly what happens time and time again in history, explained Chazal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Paro get upset at his baker and his butler so that they would end up in the same dungeon cell together with Yosef, so that they would have dreams that Yosef would solve, so that ultimately when the Sar HaMashkim would be restored to his position, he would be the one to share with Paro at the time of his troubling dreams that there is an Ish Ivri that he met who has this power of interpreting dreams, and through this Yosef HaTzadik is going to be exonerated. Through this, he is going to appear in front of Paro and ultimately become the viceroy, enabling the survival of all of Bnei Yisrael. Huh, wow. Hashem gets involved in the most mysterious of ways. So too, just as through the baker and the butler and Paro getting upset at them, Lasot Ritzon Tzaduk Umanu Yosef, that's how Yosef rose to power, Shneamar. The butler says, oh yes, there was this Hebrew boy who was able to explain the dreams to us. So too, avadim al adonehem, lasot nes latadik. Hashem is involved in this story as well in order to ensure that a miracle will be performed for a tzaddik, umanu Mordechai, because of a king getting upset. Due to the assassination plot of a baker and a butler, Mordechai will rise to power as well. Dichtiv, just stay tuned for Perek Vav. Vayivada hadavar leMordechai. Mordechai knew about this, and it's going to be written in the Sefer Zichronot that ultimately are going to save the day at the right time. According to Chazal, then, this Biktan and Teres scene is Mordechai and Esther's manner of showing us Hashgacha Pratit within the story of the Megillah. But perhaps there is another allusion, as mentioned, not just to show us that it's the same story of Yosef, but to tell us and remind us that even when you are going to hear about the rise of Mordechai as a result of all this, just like the rise of Yosef as a result of the baker and the butler, just remember what happened after the rise of Yosef. Vayamat Yosef v'kol echav v'chol hador hahu. Yosef dies, and so does that entire generation. And when that generation dies, then vayakom melech hadash al Mitzrayim, asher lo yada et Yosef. And then we return to a horrific state of galut. So keep in mind then that albeit Hashem plays a role in every stage, at the same time, there are stories of geula that must lead us back to Eretz Yisrael. Message number one. Message number two of the baker and the butler is that we find not only partners in crime, but we're meant to pay attention to their names. And what we're going to see is that the authors go out of their way to share with us, even though we said these aren't even their personal names. These are their, as we know, their official names. These are the names of their positions that they play. Well, if that's the case, then why even tell us? Yes, Biktan and Teresh. And they're always mentioned together, Biktan and Teresh. They're working, as we said, in tandem one with the other. They remind me a lot of Lewis Carroll's Tweedledum and Tweedledee. And what is the point of Tweedledum and Tweedledee? Well, they're really a true depiction of everything that's going on, if you remember Alice in Wonderland, in the Queen's Court. They're basically almost the commentators, the comic relief that we have within the Queen's Court. They're the ones who recognize all the silliness that's going on. And that's exactly Biktan and Teresh. And we'll prove it just for a moment. Even look at their names, Biktan Vateresh. You're not supposed to see them really as two independent characters. Rather, we're familiar with one of Chazal's almost what I like to call most employed code names. Anyone a fan of the game? But by this I mean something else. Chazal use various codes, especially in names. One of them is Gematria, the numerical equivalents. The other, and the most famous, that we find even employed in Tanakh, definitely in Torah Shebaal Peh, is Atbash. Excellent. Namely, within the Hebrew alphabet of our 22 letters, seeing the parallels between the first letter and the last letter. So this is your homework assignment for Purim, or I do this actually on the night of the Seder. I use different codes for everyone to figure out where they're supposed to sit. So Atbash is a great way. Figure out what your name is in Atbash, meaning the parallel. If there's an Aleph, it's parallel to a Tav. A Bet is parallel to a Shin. A Gimel is parallel to a Resh. Right, we're all doing this in our heads. So Big Tan and Teresh is actually a very easy one. Can everyone picture, if I had a board, Big Tan Vateresh? So I have Big Tan, Teresh, the, what do you know? The Bet and the Shin, right? Big Tan Teresh, the Gimel and the Resh. Then, this is very exciting, the Tav and the Tav, basically, meaning Big Tan Teresh, and then I have a Nun and a Vav, which are basically a prefix and a suffix. Everyone see that? In other words, who is Big Tan? He's Teresh. Who's Teresh? Tweedledum and Tweedledee. In other words, what the authors are basically telling us is that this is really one character. It's one character in the sense of they're playing the same exact role to depict what's going on, which is that there are various assassination plots going on within the king's court. This just happens to be one that was caught. But there's Big Tan and Teresh. In other words, they're playing really one role. And they're meant to tell you what's going on as a not just foreshadowing, but literally this is going to help us appreciate the propelling of the plot. In other words, Big Tan and Teresh are here to teach us that there are various assassination plots, and this is how it works. Someone brings up the suspicion for a plot. Then what does the king do? He has to research it, right? He has to find out. Let's go back to the psukim. Gena, stage number one, the people closest to the king, it makes sense, will be those who will attempt to assassinate him. Vayivada hadavar. And it becomes known to someone else, meaning they never keep it amongst themselves. In this case, Mordechai happens to know about the assassination plot and will tell someone else. And then, vayivukash hadavar, then it's researched, vayimatze, and if it's corroborated, vayitlu shnehem al eitz. Then you know that any assassination plot or basically treason is punishable by hanging. Beautiful. Now this reminds us a little of another story that happened right before the Big Tan and Teresh story, namely the story of Vashti, which by the way, probably is not even her real name. Rather, what does Vashti come from? Basically, the Mila Mancha, the repetitive word that appears at every significant juncture within the story of Megillat Esther. She is Mrs. Mishte. She is Mrs., it doesn't just mean party, but intoxicating beverage. That's Vashti. So that she's not actually making her own separate banquet while Ahasuerus has his seven-day party. Rather, the whole point is she is the one to remind us of intoxicating beverages. Because what happens when the king is significantly inebriated with wine? When he's in a state of drunkenness, he thinks of his wife. And he wants his wife to appear in front of him. And then we know the Vashti story. What happens? Vashti says no. Don't know exactly why, but Vashti says no. And when the king is defied, particularly by his wife, what happens? He gets very angry. That was the next stage in the story. He gets very angry, but he doesn't do anything right away. What's the next thing he does? He asks his advisors, excellent. He'll consult with his advisors. And if his advisors tell him in his state of anger to excommunicate, banish, and perhaps even kill the queen, then what will he do? Then he will do that, right? Basically, he needs a few conditions. He has to be in a Vashti state, in a state of drunkenness, something with regarding his wife, again, is aroused. His wife defies him in some way. Then while he's still, again, very, very angry over this, so again, his anger is aroused, he then consults with his closest advisors and is willing to banish the queen. Right after that, we hear about that's what he does when it comes to issues of his wives. When it comes to issues of personal treason, that's when you get hanged on a tree. Keeping in mind that we don't even know really what happens to Vashti. We're told that she's going to be banished, probably to the harem, where she will ultimately die. And Ru'uta HaTova Mimena, and will search for a replacement for her. Two different vices here, two different punishments. Now let's take a look at the continuation of the story. We know very well as we continue to Esther Perek Hey that after Mordechai implores of Esther HaMalkah, you have to be the one to go and appear in front of Ahasuerus. And even as he tells Esther, even if your life will be in danger, that ultimately this is your Jewish identity. This is your legacy on the line. And mi odea im la'ed kazot higat l'machut. This is why you're in this position right now. And Esther agrees. Anna says, if that's the case, lech knos et kol hayudim. I'm going to risk my life, but I'm doing this together with the support and with the fasting and with the Yom Kippur and with the tshuva of all of Am Yisrael as I approach the king. Well, let's take a look. What is Esther's plot? What is she thinking about? What is she ruminating over for 3 days? Which brings us back to why did she need 3 days? The Jews are in danger. It's already the month of Nisan. The letters have gone out on Yud Gimel Nisan. Esther, what are you waiting for 3 more days? We only have 11 months to save the day. And yet Esther asked for 3 days. 3 days in Tanakh, which is always a time for deliberation, consideration. That's what goes on. And Esther is wondering, what am I going to do? How am I ever going to convince the king to stop this? And she knows very well that it's not about even anti-Semitism. Haman never mentioned the Yehudim in front of Ahasuerus. Rather, all he spoke about was an Amachan Mufuzar Mufurad Bein Ha'amim, and he spoke to Ahasuerus knowing that he's in a state. As we know also from the 7th year, there's a budget deficit. So basically, he proposed to Ahasuerus, I'm going to solve your budget deficit by killing off these gypsy people. No one's going to notice that they're gone anyway, and I'll bring, again, all of their, basically the spoils, I'll bring all of the Jewish property, tell me if this sounds familiar, we'll bring all of the Jewish property to the king's treasury, basically for the war effort, and this is what is going to help the king. The king says, fine, that's great, no one's going to notice that they're gone. I get all this money, here's my tabat, do whatever you want. Esther has to think to herself, how am I going to stop this plot? And she realizes there's only way to stop the plot, one way to stop the plot. What do you do? You have to get rid of the instigator. You have to get rid of Haman. So she thinks to herself, how do you ever get rid of someone in the king's court who is so close to the king? What does she realize? What do you do? You get him drunk. That's number one. You intoxicate him. Wait a second, she says. That's why we wrote down the Vashti story. It's really not such an important story. You really don't need to know all the drama behind the story to know that now there's a vacant space for queenship. Mm-mm. You need the story of this secondary character for the sake of the plot to understand why Esther does what Esther does. She says, okay, I'm going to try to do whatever I can. I'm going to create a mishta scenario. And I'm going to arouse the suspicion of the king that the queen is defying him. Isn't that great? And then I just need a little extra help. What else does she need? I need the king to actually go ahead with the suspicion and get angry, but get angry enough at the advisor that there'll be other advisors there that will basically recommend that he be banished. How's that? Excellent. okay, it's a little weak, but that's all she has to go on. Anna, I don't know how many of you have ever seen the movie Inception, where Anna, that's part of the plot, the idea, and we do this all the time, which is to plot suspicions in other people's minds, that once you have the suspicion there, what happens? It starts breeding in your head, right? This is one of the dangers of Lashon Hara, right? You put an idea into someone's head, even if you didn't intend for it to be negative, it's going to easily transform to negative very, very quickly. Well, let's take a look here. Vayhi bayom hashlishi, Esther appears before Achashverosh, batzobash Esther malchut, batamod b'chatzar beit ha'melech ha'pnimit nochach beit ha'melech. V'ha'melech yoshev al kisei malchuto, she's standing not only in front of Achashverosh, but in the Kodesh Kadoshim, in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, beveit ha'melechut nochach petach ha'bayit. Vayhi karot ha'melech et Esther ha'melka omedet b'chatzar nisachin b'einav, vayoshit ha'melech l'Esther et sharbit ha'zahav asher b'yado, batikrav Esther batiga b'rosh ha'sharbit, vayomer la'ha'melech malach Esther ha'melkama b'kashatech at chatzi ha'melchut v'yinatein lach. And Esther knows that she can't just say, well, Haman, your closest advisor, is plotting a plot against my Jewish people, because she knows that the king wants the money, and she knows that Haman is his closest advisor. V'tomer Esther, and she knows that, and he hasn't called her for 30 days. So what does Esther ask for? Number one, ima la'melech tov yavo ha'melech v'haman. El Hamishte Asher Asta Esther. I'd like to invite the king and Haman to an intimate party of alcoholic beverage. Vayomer Hamelech Lester Bemishte Hayayin. Ma Sheilatech Vayinatin Lach. Ma Bakashatech. What do you ask for? Ad Chatzi HaMalchut Vatayas. And what's so interesting here is that we're wondering, Esther, what was your plan? Well, now we understand. Her plan was to literally plant a suspicion in the king's mind that something's going on between her and Haman. Now, by the way, what could that possibly mean? Well, it could mean, you know, some type of affair. It could also mean that there is some internal plot. So notice that even though Esther had invited for a party, the party takes place very quickly. Right. Not only that, she asked. Right. She says it has to be Yavo Hamelech v'Haman Hayom El Hamishteh Asher Asiti Lo. Vayomer Hamelech Maru At Haman Lasot Et Bar Hamelech. In other words, she sees that it worked, that it aroused suspicion, and he asks at the party, "So, what do you want, Esther?" And what does Esther ask for? Well, I don't have sufficient suspicion yet, so I want another party. Again, I want you to become more suspicious. So let's see. The king says, okay, Anna, there, machar esek kidvar hamelech. She says, don't worry, tomorrow at the second party, I will do what the king asks. And Haman goes out, and Haman is on the top of the world. And in his state of hubris, he sees Mordechai, lo yichra v'lo yishtachave. And because of his tremendous arrogance, Haman's mood is ruined, all because of this one little Jew who will not stand and bow before him, even though he knows in 11 months from now what's going to happen to Mordechai. He's going to be gone. But even right now, it bothers him. And he goes home, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayisaper lahem Haman. Or let's even go back one more, Pasuk Yud. Vayitapak Haman vayavo al beito. Vayishlach vayaveet ohavav vetzeresh ishto. He has a whole fan club. And his wife. That already tells us his wife is not in his fan club. But again, interesting that Haman tells all of his household, Kvod Ashro, Rov Banav, as we said, he's a very arrogant man, and he's going to share with them all of his wealth, Vet Kol Asher Gidlo HaMelech, Vet Asher Niso, Ala Samim Babdei HaMelech. And not only is he on the top of the world because he's the viceroy to the king, but he says, Vayomer Haman, Af Lohivia Esther HaMaka, HaMelech Ala Mishteh Asher Asata. Kim Oti. He's so blind to any other suspicion because of his own arrogance and self-centered nature that he says, you know, that Esther only invited me. V'gam l'machar ani karula im hamelech. And I'm invited to at the king's palace with her tomorrow as well. But kol ze enenu shoveli b'chol eit asher niro et Mordechai heyudi yoshe b'shar hamelech. But that Mordechai, he bothers me more than anything. So Zeresh says, can imagine Zeresh hearing that with all of Haman's glory, Haman's wealth. By the way, he has many, many children, apparently even more than the 10 that will eventually be hanged. What does that mean if he has many children? he has many wives. Zeresh perhaps is just, you know, the first one, but she knows that she's contesting for his attention and his wealth as well. And even though she's not a big fan of Haman, she recognizes that this is an opportunity. An opportunity, as Haman also is an opportunist, an opportunity to build off of the hubris of Haman and, in fact, to say, I'll solve your biggest problem. Who's your biggest problem? Mordechai. Says, I know how to solve the Mordechai problem. Notice that we have two foil characters who are both women, who are both brilliant, who are both going to be working against each other. In other words, Esther is trying to frame Haman by literally planting a suspicion of promiscuity in Ahasuerus's mind. Zeresh, unbeknownst to her, and of Esther's plot, she's going to be plotting something. She says, you want to get rid of Mordechai? I know how to get rid of Mordechai. Biktan and Teresh! Namely, all you have to do is plant a little bit of suspicion of treason in Ahasuerus's mind. And what will he do? And then he'll hang Mordechai. How do you know that? Because she says to him, she says, not to worry, I have this all taken care of. And now I understand a little bit of Zeresh's motive. She's just heard about how Haman is so excited to have an intimate party with the queen. She's like, how about me? So what does she say? She says, I know what to do. Yasu eitz gavoha chamishim ama. Now you know because of Biktan and Teresh. What does that mean? Make a tree. Chamishim ama. She basically says, this is the plan. Everyone knows if you prepare gallows, what is it for? Treason. So she says, that's all you have to do. You have to prepare treason. Basically, prepare the trees for his suspicion of treason. Obaboker emor lamelech. And what does she mean? Tell the king. What, tell the king that you prepare trees? No, tell the king that you suspect Mordechai of treason. Now, can we just stop for a moment? Esther at least has some reason for the suspicion, meaning she is planting it. She has this intimate party. What in the world could be any basis for suspicion of Mordechai committing treason? Biktan and Teresh. What happened in the Biktan and Teresh story? Who out of everyone knew about the plot? Mordechai. One second. Mordechai knew about the plot to kill the king. How would Mordechai know about it? All Haman has to tell Ahasuerush, and this helps us understand why it was written down, but we're going to see in just a moment, Mordechai was never rewarded. Strange, he saved the life of the king. Why wasn't he rewarded? Because the king had to wonder, Mordechai, if you knew about this, then maybe you were initially in on this as well. All you have to do, Haman, is go to Ahasuerush. Remind him of that Biktan and Teresh story that happened 5 years ago and tell him that you know that Mordechai was in on that treason. And what will the king do? He'll look back, he'll research, he'll see that Mordechai knew. And what will he do? He'll kill him, he'll hang him on the tree. How do you like that? And especially, why didn't they hang Mordechai beforehand? Because there was no one to actually accuse him, because there's no reason to accuse him. But now, Zeresh says, this is what you're going to do. You're going to plant that suspicion in his head. And how does he punish treason? Not with banishment, but with hanging on a tree. Notice these two virtual plots. Aren't they brilliant? Esther is plotting a virtual suspicion of promiscuity. And Zeresh is planting a virtual suspicion of treason. Is any of this really going on? Is Mordechai really guilty of treason? Is Haman really guilty of promiscuity? No. They're so brilliant. Gana, they're both working. And here's the irony of ironies that Mordechai and Esther write about. Each of these women is planting a plot against the other, unbeknownst to the other, but they each are basically canceling out the other. Meaning, if Mordechai is accused of treason, before Esther's party, everyone see what's going to happen? Uh-oh, Mordechai will be hanged, and then Esther can't talk about any other plot because Haman is Ahasuerus's right-hand man. It will be found out that she's related to Mordechai. Uh-oh. And here is where timing all comes into the picture. Esther has to have Ahasuerus believe in the suspicion of promiscuity before anything else. Now, Esther doesn't even know the timing issue. Who feels the suspense now and is hearing that tense music in the background? We are. We're the only ones who know about both of these plots, and that's how Mordechai and Esther are writing this. And now we all feel the tension. Oh, no. Now, there really is tension, because if you're Ahasuerus and you hear about the possibility of your second in command, possibly plotting something with your queen, or you hear that someone is trying to kill you, which one are you going to answer first? The call of treason, meaning, I hate to say this, Zeresh's plot is a much stronger plot than Esther's. Everyone see this? She has much more to go on than Esther, because Zeresh has actually the Bigtan and Tera story. All that Esther has is the Vashti story that we know that the king actually regretted afterwards. Uh-oh, we're thinking. If Zeresh's plot wins out, then we're in trouble. I see none of you are really quite nervous. Oh, you all know what happens at the end. But imagine you're reading this for the first time. So sure enough, she says, wait till you mention to the king the next morning, right? She says, wait till the morning, and then I'm sure by Yitzluot Mordechai Alav. Can it be later, just because I heard that I really have to end on time. So here, we're now going to, don't worry, we're going to resolve this whole problem. And then she says, then you'll come to the Mishteh Sameach. In other words, this is all going to happen within the next 24 hours. Vayitav hadavar lifnei Haman vayasa eitz. So he knows, again, he's going to prepare the tree. But this is the remarkable thing that happens. Balailahu nadidashnat hamelech. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, time for me to get involved. Balaila hahu. It can't wait till the next night. Esther can't ask for another party. It's because of what happened in the previous pasuk that Mordechai and Esther write. It must be that night HaKadosh Baruch Hu got involved. And what happened? Vayomer Levi Yitzifar Zachorno Tiberi HaYamim. Now we understand everything that's going on. The king has been invited by Esther to a party just with Haman. What's going on in the king's mind? Of course he's suspicious. And what is he thinking about? What happens when we're suspicious? His queen just asked him to come to a party, and now she asked to have another party. Again, an inebriating experience. He's wondering, what in the world is going on? So what happens when you wonder what's going on? Human nature is, we always think the worst. So he's thinking, okay, either there's something going on between the two of them against me, or they want to divulge that, I don't know, maybe someone else is trying to kill me, right? Everyone see this? Again, numerous. What's going on? Is my queen defying me? Is there treason going on? Meaning he's thinking of every possible scenario. So he says, let me see, is there any reason that anyone, and we're going to see that really his greater suspicion actually is treason more than it is any type of promiscuity. He's wondering right now, what is going on? Is someone plotting against me? Well, let me see. Is there any reason for someone to plot against me? And what do you know? Right? He hears about how Mordechai was the one to reveal the assassination plot of Bigtan and Teresh, Asher Mishomrei Hasaf, that were closest to him. So now the king is thinking, wait a second, Mordechai was in that story with Bigtan and Teresh. By Yomar HaMelech, wait a second, maybe Mordechai is upset with me because I never gave him a reward. So he says, Manase yikar gdula l'Mordechai alze. Now it's in the king's best interest to reward someone who divulged a plot of assassination. He's basically saying, anyone who knows anything about any plots to assassinate me, please come forward right now, right? And he's wondering what type of reward was given. But at the same time, what other suspicion can he have right now? Maybe Mordechai really wants to kill me because he knew about that plot and I never gave him a reward. So the best thing to do now is give him a reward, or maybe actually have him killed because he's the one who's trying to kill me. Again, all these different suspicions. But then this is what happens. Pasuk Dalid. While the king is thinking all this, Vayamra Melech mi bachatzer. Vahaman ba lachatzer beit hamelech hachitzona lemar lamelech letlot et Mordechai ala itzah sher hechin lo. Now keep this in mind. What did Zeresh tell him? Yes, wait till the morning, accuse him of treason, prepare the tree. But Haman, because of his own hubris, cannot contain himself. That very night, what is he going to do? He is going to go to tell the king and prepare the gallows. Wait a second, it's that very night. And Haman is preparing this in the Chatzer Hachitzona. That's basically the outer chamber right outside the king's inner chambers. The king is wondering, what is someone doing in my closed chambers at 12 o'clock at night? And it's Haman. Okay, other part of his brain going on now. What is he suspecting? There is promiscuity going on between Esther and Haman. Everyone see this? This poor king. Gana, so much going on in his head. Gana and Haman is in the chatzer. Lemor lamelech, letlotet Mordechai alayitz. He's not there to see Esther. The king doesn't know that. Gana, he's there to prepare the gallows for Mordechai. Vayomru narei amelech elav, hinei Haman omed b'chatzer. What do you know? Vayomru amelech yavo. So now who's the king suspicious of? Now more Haman. Okay, he put his suspicions against Mordechai aside. He said, let me test out Haman now. Maybe Haman is behind this. So he tells Haman, Ma lasot b'ish asher ha-melech hafeitz b'ikaro? And Haman says, here's his hubris again. Lemi achpotz ha-melech lasot yikar yoter mimeni? V'yom Raman, ish asher ha-melech hafeitz b'ikaro? I'll tell you how you should reward someone. Give him everything, except, even including, he says, even his Keter Malchut, the Levush Malchut, the Melech of the Melech, the Sus, and the Keter Malchut. The king hears, you're suggesting that I give someone else the Keter Malchut? What's going on in the king's mind? His suspicion against Haman is greater. Venaton HaLevush HaSus, so he says to Haman, wait a second, it's not Mordechai who I'm suspicious of anymore. Haman, you take Mordechai throughout the streets. Esther now knows, is there a sufficient suspicion against Haman now? Yes, time for the party. But let's see, Gena at the party. Odam et abrimi mobisar haisei hamelech higiu v'yavilu lahavi et Haman el hamishteh asher asta Esther. And what happens at the party? Well, let's see. Again, Esther Perek Zion. Esther at the party is going to say she knows about this public display of humiliation of Haman. She knows then, she figures out what happened. Oh my, the king remembered that Mordechai was the one to save him. And he's humiliating Haman because Haman must have irked him in some way. Now is the perfect time to frame Haman. And she says, this is the man who is not just trying to kill my people, but me included. And basically, what does she do now? This isn't about, the king knows about the gzeirah. He now sees that Haman may have, and these are all suspicions, but he may have ulterior motives. Maybe kill out the queen's people, take the queen, take the malchut, take the keter. And all these are merely suspicions. And when you have so many suspicions coming together at the same time, the king says, wait a second, he's at the party. He's very angry. He knows that last time this happened, he had a lot of suspicions. This time also, there was an offense dealing with his wife. And, his therapist told him last time, next time this happens, go outside to your merpeset. Take 10 deep breaths, come back in. So he goes outside and we're thinking, no, Esther's probably thinking, no, you're not supposed to calm down. You're supposed to be very, very angry. But don't worry, because what happens at that moment? Haman puts it all together. Haman realizes, oh my gosh, this was a plot against me. And therefore he turns to Esther and he falls upon Esther. Perfect timing. The king comes back in. Remember that suspicion he had put aside of promiscuity? Guess what? Oh, that's back. Hagam lechbosh. Eta hamalka imi babayit. Now, what does he want to do? He's looking around. We know there's only one other factor that he needs. Esther needs one other factor that is completely beyond her control because she asked for an intimate party. What is that last factor? She needs an advisor who's going to suggest that the perpetrator be banished. Who's that advisor going to be? And here the king comes back. Vayomer charvona echad min hasarisim lifnei hamelech gam hinei ha'etz asher asa Haman leMordechai. What does Charvona say? Oh, by the way, Haman made a tree for Mordechai. I.e., Haman was about to accuse Mordechai, who saved you, Mordechai, of treason. What does the king now know for sure? Haman, in the end, is the one guilty of treason. Now, we, the readers, know. Was Haman guilty of promiscuity? No. Was Haman guilty of treason? Absolutely not. He's only guilty of one thing, namely hubris. That's right. But that's what led to his downfall, even though Zeresh had the better plan. But that's exactly what the story is coming to teach us. Gam hinei ha'etz. Wait a second. How does Charvona know about the tree? Who knew about the tree? Only Zeresh and his fan club. Who's his fan club? The head of Haman's fan club is Charvona. Bigtan and Teresh taught us one other message. You remember Tweedledum and Tweedledee? How do you work in the story? Everyone has a partner. Esther works inside the palace. Mordechai works outside. Haman works inside. Haman deals with everything in the Chatzer HaChitzona. He's working with Charvona. Charvona is his partner in crime. Charvona should be the one protecting him right now, but Charvona knows, if Haman is incriminated, who's next in line? I know the way that this works. They're going to research this. And who's going to be found? Bigtan and Teresh. Haman and Charvona. Charvona was the inside person who basically, as we end now, he's the one. Gam hinei ha'etz asher asa Haman leMordechai asher diber tov al ha'melech omei bebeit Haman gavoha 50 ama vayomer ha'melech, that's enough research. Tlu'uhu alav, especially in a state of inebriation. And that's why there's a machloket. Do we like Charvona? Do we not like Charvona? He's Haman's campaign manager. But then again, he saved the day at this moment. So Chazal say, we don't like Charvona, but we like Gam Charvona. We like the Gam Hinei Ha'etz. We like what Charvona said. The Gam of Charvona is Zachor Latov. Perim Sameach Chodesh Tov to everyone.